Hi, this is Yahoo's with a microphone. Certainly tonight that's the case. I'm Brian Scuttle.
I'm Ronnie Haynes.
Hey, Ma.
Megan T.
And, Mike, this is the first time you've been watching Speed Racer Air. We all have seen it before, so hope you like it.
I guess we'll get into why in the world Mike is here later on, I suppose.
Oh, I hope not.
We had a little bit of a theme there at the beginning of the movie.
I really like just, the way the exposition is tied in at the beginning of this year. I mean, it's just really great. I mean, hopefully I'll be the only time Ron tries that joke tonight. We're doing Speed Racer, obviously, the Wachowski brothers adaptation.
Summer movie.
Adaptation of the cartoon show from the 60s.
Wonderful score by Michael Giacchino. How do you pronounce his last name?
Giacchino, I believe.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Giacchino? I don't know, something like that.
Great composer.
He's done,
Wait, Mike can't hear. We talk.
Michael Giacchino, he's done Ratatouille, The Incredibles, and pretty much everything J.J. Abrams has done.
He did that piece for the end credits to Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Mother figure before.
And he's going to be doing the next Star Trek movie.
Yeah. Again, like we said, everything J.J. Abrams has done. Mm-hmm. I think that pretty much covered everything. That is kind of the idea, yeah.
I mean, everything you say to me from here on for the rest of the night, is just going to have that spite behind it, Brian? I mean,
not necessarily, but, in some cases, I think it's just fine. We just saw Susan Sarandon as a mom racer.
Is that their name, Mom and Pop?
Yeah.
That's their name?
Yeah.
I think that's what the names are in the credits, so, yeah. I mean, if it isn't obvious, I'm not familiar with the cartoon, but I really fell in love with this movie the first time I saw it, and I insisted on seeing it, two or three more times after I did. It was my favorite movie of the summer. This is obviously the summer of, that Dark Knight, but this one just really struck a chord with me for various reasons that I think I'll get into as the movie goes along. But go ahead, Brian.
Okay. Here we get love and idea of the very artificial universe that the Wachowskis do. I mean, it's pretty obvious that a lot of this is green screen work, and there's very little actual live action footage here.
But you totally buy it.
Oh yeah,
it's a little jarring at first. I mean, in all honesty, it is a little jarring at first. I mean, the first time I saw this. But, I mean, all sincere, I totally accepted this universe, 5 minutes into it, if not sooner.
The only thing that comes to mind when I see this environment is Cat in the Hat.
Sorry. I can't say anything. I have not seen Cat in the Hat, but I have heard stories.
Not giving me a good feeling.
it's done much better in this movie.
Yeah.
Show scenes from this that in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a very good trailer too.
I love the trailer too. Who's the guy who plays Younger Rex?
Oh, I don't know actually.
Just the whole concept of the racing, I thought it was brilliantly done. I mean. The cartoon obviously does not look like this.
Yeah.
Where do you go just to get the idea for all this? I think just some of that imagery is just genius.
How long was this movie in development for, do you know?
Oh, I think it's at least 10 years or so. I mean, I can't remember who started with the property. I think it was Joel Silver originally.
Had it for a long time.
10-15 years at least. Mm-hmm. And so eventually the Wachowskis came on, obviously after doing The Matrix with Joel Silver. Mm-hmm. And
as well as V for Vendetta.
Yeah, although they just wrote that. They didn't direct it. But this is just, you know, I just brilliant the way they do the flashbacks as well as the modern stuff, the present day stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to be honest with you, this is actually my favorite part of the movie. Just the blending of the flashbacks, and you know, this first time you see the racing is just so
yeah.
Unique. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you know, coming up when they have him kind of chasing his brother Shadow, I just thought that was almost genius.
Yeah.
I think when we saw this review, when you were seeing it for the first time, David, did we not come in like a couple minutes late?
Yeah, we did.
So like, hey, I thought it was really neat that you picked up on this as quick. You usually pick up on things pretty quickly anyway, but I like that you know we did in fact when we saw this with Dave's first time, and we were a couple minutes late, and we were talking about it with Dave after the movie, and I thought it was neat that Dave was able to pick up on it as quickly as he did. But,
and we should say it's like when Dave saw us for the first time, we were watching it on IMAX.
Yes, we were.
Which I had already seen it a couple of times. No, wait a minute, I had only seen it once.
As had I think.
Yeah.
I think like that was the case with me as well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the
that's something for James. That feature from the cartoon.
I'm pretty sure they did that in the cartoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the other racers are from the cartoon.
Yes.
Soon,
a lot of the different
Snake
characters.
Snake Boiler, I know, the Grey Ghost.
Yeah.
These guys are all from the cartoon. Neil Hirsch playing Speed.
Yeah.
Coming out from that Sean Penn movie. What was
Into the Wild.
Yeah.
And he was also in The Girl Next Door.
He was just recently offered, Dave, I don't know if you know this, Neil Hirsch was just recently offered Green Lantern, which he turned down.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
I love the guy who plays Sparky.
Yeah, and I can't remember what his name is, although I know I've seen him and stuff. He's but
that's his brother. He was seeing his brother in his eyes.
Yeah.
As driver. It's like he's just raping his brother.
But I just love how intense the visuals are, and like just how they're just an attack on your senses. Like, you know, you particularly if you're watching this with surround sound, it's very
mm-hmm.
powerful. I think. Just the visuals, this was such a underrated movie. I thought, you know, in terms of, you know, technically speaking, it didn't get any nominations for any technical awards, which I was really disappointed. I was disappointed it didn't get nominated for editing because I thought the editing was really interesting and unique and.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, we were saying, like, we were talking about that, you know, right, just as, like, you know, the initial reaction was, you know, coming out of the movie, you know, people were reacting about the movie the way they were, and I remember us being as disappointed as we were that it wasn't getting the reaction that we would have liked.
Although, I mean, as something you said was, it's actually kind of a good thing that it didn't do as well as it should have been because of the fact that we won't see sequels to it that were completely unnecessary.
Because the thing is, like, this story, it's such a, I mean, it is a little long for like this kind of movie.
Yeah.
But it's a complete story. It's a complete story.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely self-contained.
Yeah.
And, I mean.
It is. It's actually very epic, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but we missed a few character introductions here, I think.
Yeah, we really have. Sprite and Chim Chim, obviously.
Pops, well, Pops.
Yeah.
And now Trixie,
mm-hmm.
played by
Christina Ricci, who looks fantastic in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And I like this stuff with seeing them as little kids. I thought this was really cute.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is just such a cool way of doing the exposition.
Right.
It's like getting all of the characters introduced in a way that's interesting and, you know, sets all of the relationships up and stuff.
Yeah.
Isn't that how it is back in those days?
I can remember being a little reserved going into this because I did think it looked really promising from you know all the trailers and you know TV spots and everything. But you know, having some reservation just because of you know what we all thought of the two Matrix sequels.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I wasn't a huge fan of the Matrix series in general.
Amen.
So,
you liked the first one, didn't you?
Hated it.
Didn't you like the first one?
I got woken up so many times by that first one at the apartment.
I know Dave and I liked the first one.
Yeah, we talked about that at length in our commentary.
Well, you typed it. I barely got a word in edgewise, but...
Oh, wait, and I was talking about Dark Savior.
I thought pretty much got my feelings across anyway in that discussion.
Mm-hmm. And we're also setting up Rex Racer and the dilemma he's had, so.
Wouldn't it just be easier just to throw it instead of, like, you know, like, breaking off the broom, the mop handle, and just doing all this? I mean, it's cool. You know, for the sake of, you know, cool, but...
Yes, they could have just thrown it.
They could have just chucked it.
This is some really great music by Giacchino right here. Just in general, I mean, I would have loved to have heard seen a two-disc
because
there's so much spectacular music in here. I mean, and it's almost throughout. The entire movie, too. I mean, there's very few cases where there isn't any music going on.
And you're also touching on something with you know, the DVD release and how there was, like, absolutely nothing on the DVD.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a little bit as far as the extras, and it's like, I'm sorry, they're a joke. They're not what I would like.
Blu-ray version?
I think there is more on the Blu-ray, but I think...
But to have nothing on the standard is just really disappointing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm walking away from this liking this, you know, just as much if not more than the first Matrix movie. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many things about this movie. Like, I tend to, you know, I was watching this the other night. I got into it to the point where I was like realizing that. I kind of look upon Speed Racer in this movie anyway. I can't speak in terms of the cartoon, but I look at Speed Racer now, you know, in the same way I kind of like looked at, you know, the kind of same way I saw Luke, you know, when I was first, you know, I was first discovering, you know, the original Star Wars trilogy. I mean, he's that level of hero to me.
I was wondering which Luke you were referring to, because there's so many.
Yeah. But.
I'm glad to know that some people have
saw it's
that.
Yeah, the
viewing.
Luke from Star Wars, not the Luke from that other trilogy. But anyway, we're getting to the backstory of, like, you know, what supposedly happened to Bryce Racer.
Right. John Goodman as Pops, just absolutely perfect casting.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan Sarandon, too, is Mom Racer.
Well, there's an image coming. There's an image later on in the movie that, like, I saw on the trailer. I was like, that's Speed Racer. It's a movie. It's a shot of the family.
Yeah.
Staying in the hotel. And, like, but, I am glad that this movie won't be ruined with a sequel just because of, you know, it's... It's a complete story, and I'm really taken with the character Speed Racer now because of this movie. I mean, like, again, I can't speak to the cartoon. I'm a little afraid to watch the cartoon because, like, I know how cheesy it is.
Yeah.
And, like, I think, like, my perceptions of Speed Racer might be tarnished a little bit if I tried to get into the cartoon. You know, so.
I think if you watch the breadth of all the episodes, you'd kind of really clearly understand kind of where all this is, because they're kind of pulling from, you know, all the places they're coming in. But, you know, I think you could kind of I think it'd be worth it to watch them all, but you know, if you're just going to cherry pick a few episodes and think that you were in the midst of Speed Racer, I don't think that's the case.
Well, I love all the, I love stuff like, you know, I love stuff that they do, you know, in terms of, making it, so making some of the dialogue sound like it's from a cheesy, you know, Japanese anime show. I like how that's interpreted. I like how that's incorporated in the dialogue. I really enjoyed that. I think that was a really neat little touch.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm not gonna try and replicate it because like it's Seth Green actually does that really well. I've heard Seth Green in a couple of commentaries like, you know, going to like his anime voice. It's really funny. But I'm not gonna do it because I know I wouldn't be able to do it that good.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in the audience see that in the car, or is it just in his mind?
That's supposed to. Well, why don't we try to explain what's going on here to Mike?
Do you need it explained, or, I mean, are you catching on pretty easily?
I think he is, but he isn't, just because, I mean, first of all, we're talking.
I can't hear anything.
I know, we're talking over it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
looks like he got the records, right?
No, just barely missed it. He slowed down on purpose.
Yeah.
So that his brother would keep the record because his brother had to go down. Let's see.
The kid who plays Spridle is really good.
Yeah, I can't remember what he's.
That's the thing. You
know, what his name is, but he was actually Gao.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, he had a little bit of a role in Gao.
You know what I'm gonna say is like I actually saw like a like kind of a cross promotion kind of a thing. I saw a DVD on sale. Right when the movie came out, and it was like an animated Speed Racer. Yeah.
This is funny.
This is very funny.
This is a really cheesy, but it's really funny.
Well, it's funny because it is cheesy.
Yeah.
Cheesy on purpose. Dave being our resident anime expert, what do you have to say about this scene, Dave?
Yeah, I never really felt that.
Well, it's a parody of anime. Does it not succeed on that level to you?
I mean, plenty of anime shows like have these moments where they take you out of it and go completely stupid and completely silly. This is fine, but I never thought those moments really just worked well in this movie.
Well, I think it does. I think it works really well as a parody of anime.
Right,
supposed to be.
Right. And I understand that. But even as a parody of anime, I think it works well.
Maybe it works more with me because I don't know as much.
Right. Well, maybe it's for me. It's just the live action. It just it works better to take you out of that and take you into this world of craziness for like 3 seconds. That works better for me in animation than live action.
Yeah.
It's just, live action just doesn't come across as cleanly as it does.
Yeah.
Well, what I was gonna say is just the fact that they're using a real live monkey. Okay, yeah, I saw this kind of cross promotion, you know, straight to DVD.
No, chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee, sorry. I saw this DVD on sale right when the movie came out. It was like a animated version of, or like more futuristic, I don't know, but like they had a robotic monkey or chimpanzee, excuse me, in that one. I'm like, it's just a testament to the fact that like the closer you stick to the source material, the better it is. You know, like the fact that like they're using a real chimp instead of like, you know, trying to make it more interesting for kids by using a robotic chimp. You know, I don't know. Like, you get what I'm saying? It's just a testament to like, you know,
the chimp
working as well as it does in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is just a testament to like, you know.
Yeah. Right.
The closer
you
stay to the source material, the better it is.
Right.
Dave, you agree? Disagree? Indifferent?
Mm-hmm.
Well, plus I think. I think Congo probably ruined using animatronic apes
I'm not talking about animatronics. I'm talking about like the fact that like, you know, the filmmakers didn't try to make the chimp, like, you know, cooler and make it, like, a robotic, you know, like a date.
Who's this guy?
This is
J.R. Royal, and he played by...
He was in V for Vendetta.
Yeah, he was. I'm trying to remember what his name was. What his name is, though. But yeah, he was in V for Vendetta.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really good in that as well.
Yeah.
I didn't even put that together now until you guys mentioned it there, but he was in V for Vendetta.
Are you going to put that up on your iPhone there, too?
I'm going to look that up on my iPhone.
Okay.
So it's Rod or something. I can't remember what his last name is.
Well,
Dave put
it up on iPhone. On his iPhone.
One of the things that I really like about this movie is it sort of combines the underdog sports movie with, you know, in a couple of my blogs that I review where I looked at it, I sort of compared it to, it was like an underdog sports movie by way of like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where in the end, I mean, Speed Racer is basically just trying to, like, end corruption and stuff like that. And in the field, I mean, that's something you don't really see in too many sports movies. But, I mean, you know. So,
well, it's an underdog sports movie without being a freaking underdog sports movie. It's like, you know. It's,
right.
It's an underdog story without it being like every other underdog story you've already seen.
Mm-hmm.
Are you knocking Rocky and Rudy at that point?
I'm not knocking Rocky and Rudy. I'm just saying, like, thank God it's being original. It's being its own movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rocky. I love Rudy. I particularly love Rocky. But, you know, I'm just saying this is an underdog movie without, well, at the same time being its own movie.
Right. No, I get that. Yeah.
So
I get
far,
that.
We're watching the racing of the older brother of Speed Racer, or is it actually...
No. Now, earlier on, we were watching, like, we were getting the backstory of the brother in with what's going on now with Speed.
Okay.
So, I mean, now Speed's basically, like, the hotshot racer in the family, and...
The older brother's presumably supposedly died... cross-country race.
Yeah, and was linked to underground gambling and basically criminal activity when it came to racing. So.
Well, although, like, the idea is that he was, you know, that team where he's saying goodbye to young Speed, that's where he's officially going underground to, like, you know, hopefully, you know, take down the bad guys, I guess.
But, yeah.
You know, that's... Does that help, Mike? Okay. I heard some people say that, like, this was too intense for kids at some point, at certain point.
I mean, especially when you consider, like, the cross-country later.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that basically everybody's trying to take each other out and stuff like that. I mean, even though nobody, like, actually dies... Because, I mean, you know, it's like you sort of see, you know, what happens when
even
it crashes. But I can see this being a little scary for younger. I mean, it's one of those that sort of goes not quite towards PG-13, but enough to where, you know, probably wouldn't show it to anybody younger than, like, 10.
I guess, yeah, I see that. I'm glad to see movies, you know, utilizing the PG rating more. You know, like, Prisoner of Azkaban was one of the hardest, you know, PG I'd ever seen, I think. And this is another one. I'm glad they're using that format, you know, to, like, not, you know, or, like, Coraline. That was another one that was, like, kind of sort of pushing, you know.
Well, I mean, the way I would, you know, when you're talking, and I agree with you as far as the PG rating, the movie I would, you know, bring up when it comes to this, and I mentioned it before, is National Treasure, which, I mean, I love the fact that those movies were PG.
Yeah, so do I.
Because it's like, there's nothing, they don't feel the need for, like, gratuitous violence or gratuitous language and all that stuff.
And it's completely entertaining.
And it's the same thing with here. I mean, the Wachowski brothers, I mean, they made some pretty hard R-rated movies with the Matrix movies and Bound in V for Vendetta, but, like, here, I mean, they show that they can play it within the realm of PG without being just a stupid kids movie.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's completely entertaining, and it's like, and it appeals to the kid in me just as much as it appeals to the adult in me.
Right.
So.
Roger Alon?
He plays Royalton?
Yeah.
He plays Bridal?
All right, well, Dave does
Sparky while you're at it.
And Sparky.
Okay, well, Dave looks at his iPhone again.
I think there was two chips.
Yeah, there were.
I'm sure there were.
Yeah, I do remember that.
I'm glad we're seeing the PG rating being utilized in that sense more.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's nice. That's the thing. I think there are like way too many R-rated movies out nowadays. I think particularly ever since Judd Apatow came into the social consciousness or whatever, however you want to refer to it, like he's like made it okay again for more R-rated movies to be made. I'm like, that's great.
Well, I mean,
but there's so many. Like we were watching How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, and you and I both basically agreed that like the stuff in that movie that made it R was completely unnecessary.
Yeah,
that's what
I
would agree with that too.
Like there are like way too many R-rated movies now that have for all the wrong reasons.
But at the same time, there are movies that get away with the PG-13 rating when they should be R-rated.
Well, it's Dark Knight.
I mean,
Dark Knight. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's just a franchise. It's a comic book movie, so it's gonna, But
no,
I did like that Dark Knight was as hard a PG-13 as it could be. I mean, that's the thing. That's what's great about the rating system is when you apply the rules correctly, it can be.
Brian doesn't think the rules are applied correctly in that case.
Well, I mean, I think I've mentioned to at least Ron and Dave that it's like in college I actually wrote a paper on the movie rating system Really?
No,
I
don't think
I did. I need to post it online because of the fact that the fact of the matter is, the rating system as it is just shot all to hell.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
Well, that documentary, This Movie's Not Your Rated, that movie talks about you. That was enough. I didn't like it as much as you did, but that was an interesting movie, I thought.
Yeah.
It was an interesting documentary. So we somehow got into a discussion of the rating system.
It's like we're talking about the fact that this is PG. I mean, it's a legitimate discussion because of the fact that, this is a movie that you wouldn't necessarily, because of who's involved in it, necessarily. Expect it to be a PG movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's like, and the fact of the matter is, it's like there are a lot of movies that don't get the rating they deserve.
Exactly.
And it's like a lot of it is politics, a lot of it is otherwise, but...
And I'm just talking about, like, the fact, I think what I'm saying is pretty valid, that, like, there are a lot of movies that really don't have to be.
Again,
right away.
Okay, who plays Sparky? Christina Ricci had very little to do in this movie, but she made the most of it.
Yeah.
What now?
It's like the thing is,
that's the thing. It could have been one of those roles that, like,
Gary.
Who?
Kate Gary Sparky.
Okay.
I was about to make a point before you stepped on my cue. But what I was going to say was, as far as Christina Ricci and as far as the fact that like she didn't have a whole lot to do, I wouldn't necessarily put it that way in the sense that I would want to see more of her character. I thought for
what's like more of her, but
no, I'm with you on that, but at the same time, in terms of the story. I wouldn't want to see more of Trixie because of the fact that what she has to do in the movie is perfectly fine. Everybody fills specific roles. For as ambitious as this is, in terms of visuals and all of that stuff, and the fact that it's a PG movie and stuff like that, I mean, you know, it's like, it does still follow a lot of the cliches, and it's like you have a lot of different roles that need to be filled, and to differing degrees, and, you know, I don't have a problem with, you know, how minimal certain roles are, but...
What I was going to say is, I mean, you know, you make a good point, but what I'm saying is, like roles, like, you know, parts like Trixie or the mom, you know, that we didn't, you know, they could have very easily been dismissed as like, oh, they just got the biggest person they could, to, you know, for that role, you know, which, I mean, we kind of didn't need Susan Sarandon. I mean, we kind of didn't need Susan Sarandon's mom. We kind of didn't need Christina Ricci as Trixie. I mean, those weren't huge parts.
Oh, right. I mean, and, you know, I mean, this is a case with a lot of different movies. Where, yeah. I mean, it's not just...
Particularly animated movies. We got into that discussion.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm talking about, like, you know, but the fact of the matter is, it's like, and Roger Ebert mentioned this in one of his reviews that he wrote on JFK, which the reason I bring that up is the fact that it's like, you know, there are a ton of people in that movie.
Yeah, but you know what?
Small
you know, world, with JFK?
Well, wait a minute. I'm hanging here. And one of the things that he says about it is that, well, I mean, while you wouldn't necessarily want to necessarily feel like you need to get somebody that big, those particular actors just, you know, sort of have a comfort level that they bring just immediately,
yeah,
just by their presence.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So, no, you don't need Susan Sarandon as Mom Racer. Or really, John Goodman as Pop's Racer.
Well, John Goodman.
But the fact of the matter is, it's like those actors have personalities to them that make it, that give you an immediate emotional connection with those characters.
I think John Goodman. So, I think Susan Sarandon felt a little bit more unnecessary than John Goodman did. I didn't really question John Goodman because that was actually a pretty significant part in the movie.
Right. Just making sure.
Now this is a little subplot here. Maybe we should try to explain to Mike if he's even trying to. I'm sure he's still trying to follow the movie.
Yeah,
Annie would be freaking out right about now.
This part's a little intense for kids.
Yeah, this is Cruncher Block, who is one of the race fixers, and Rain as the Japanese pop star Rain as a Tetsuan Togo-kan, who's a rival racer.
And this Billy George lookalike. What's the rock star's name?
Yeah, Boy George.
Boy George.
Yeah.
I was thinking, Boy George lookalike driving the truck.
And here we've got.
This is a really cool
Matthew Fox. Yeah.
Yeah.
Matthew Fox as a Racer X here.
Mm-hmm. This movie basically is like, you know, I really feel like in a lot of ways this movie really is kind of like Star Wars, you know, I don't want to say concrete, what's another more, you know, better sounding word than that, but like, you know, just
Star Wars. I don't know if there really is. I mean, I guess
Star Wars on the highway, I don't know, like Star, you know what I'm saying, like, you know.
I mean, I get what you're trying to say. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of Star Wars-y elements in here.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely a lot to be compared to Star Wars. Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's you don't automatically think of Star Wars.
Oh, no, you don't.
That's the appealing part. Is like, it's a classic story.
Yeah.
It's a story that's done. That's originally what...
It does what Star Wars did in a different with a different genre.
With a different
adventure genre.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the pilot to get loose here.
Star Wars was more of a swashbuckler, serial type, you know, action adventure type thing.
Yeah.
This is Star Wars basically as a, for the, like, underdog sports movie.
Yeah.
In a way.
I wish we could come up with something better way to articulate that, but I mean, I'm talking more about me than I am you, Brian. But
yeah, those guys are creepy. Can't remember who plays Cruncher Block, but I mean, I've seen him before too.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty terrible.
Sticking him in.
Yeah.
Very anime move. Yeah. Right there.
Pretty much.
Like, he's just like nodding in agreement. He's like, yeah.
He can deny it. I mean, you know, it's like.
I just kind of wish Dave had more to say, because Dave again is our resident anime geek.
Maybe if you'd be quiet.
You guys should roll.
Okay.
Are we doing okay as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, you're doing well.
Thanks, Dave.
That's I'm not really concerned. No, I mean, again, I haven't seen Speed Racer in a very long time. I know they did a re-release of the entire anime show not too long after this came out.
Yeah.
So I think they re-released it on DVD. They did something special.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been so long since I've seen it. And, you know, I mean, here we're seeing like...
Fishing
yeah.
Okay.
We're seeing, like, innovative imagery that you might see in an anime thrown on screen, but we've already seen that in the Matrix.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then the anime like sequences here where they go into half cartoon and half live action mode. I don't think I'm very well done.
I think
from an anime perspective, I don't have too much to say that hasn't already been said because of the Matrix. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I really do like the way these scenes are written.
Yeah.
I mean that's the thing, that, like, this movie could have been done so badly, and the chances that we're actually, I mean, again, coming off of our feelings of you know, the Matrix sequels, or in Brian's case, the Matrix trilogy, you know, this movie could have really easily have been done very badly.
Well, in Mike's case, the Matrix trilogy too.
Yeah,
I.
But
it was number
but,
one, at least bad.
But like these kind of you know, romantic scenes in the car on, like, you know, the lookout point.
I mean,
these are actually really well done. They're really well written. They're really well acted. Right. Really well directed.
I want to see the rest of her dress. So, I'm just saying.
I think everybody in the theater
that
was a male.
Yeah. My favorite shot's like the one of her in the helicopter from, like, you know, the
from the
floor. I think that's a lot of.
I don't know about her hair.
I think she pulls it off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I
think Japanese cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that is the way Trixie pretty much looks in the cartoon, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Where the manipulation is happening.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
You can tell that without hearing
the eye roll. Yeah, yeah. Look at that. You get, like, the eye rolls and the
and,
tone of voice. And
yeah, I mean, you know, as much credit as the Wachowski brothers deserve for making this work, I mean, the actors, too.
Right.
I mean, if you could...
This could have been Attack of the Clones bad. I mean, that's the likelihood of, like, the scene not working.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, right. I mean, it also could have been, like, completely cheesy, campy in the... same way that, like, Scooby-Doo was.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, here, let's just pose and make it look like we're, you know, we're genuine in this. And it's like, yeah.
I'd be pissed.
Oh, I would be.
With, like, a girl with legs like that.
Well, Brian, Dave, you come from a family where you actually had brothers, so. Well, I did, but in different circumstances. So.
Yeah.
Mike, did you ever do this to Austin?
No.
Which would explain why he's alive to be here right now.
That's right.
But, like, you know, again, like, this stuff is Spritel and Chim Chim. Like, it just, it works.
But the thing is, it's like...
How is this working? I mean, this does not deserve to work.
Right.
This stuff does not deserve to work.
Should be known you should never ride in the trunk of a car like that.
But that's a Rambler scene, I think. But, like, that stuff on Lookout Point, all the stuff with Chim Chim and Spritel, that stuff should not have worked.
Mm-hmm.
But it did.
Admittedly, it's like this sequence, this little bit of business here, I mean, it's kind of hard to figure out the first time you see it.
Yeah,
I
agree.
You know, it's not until you get the scene with Royalton and Speed later in his office that you really understand what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So...
You can kind of tell that guy was pretty shady, and now you're getting a little more of it.
Well, yeah.
This is a long movie.
This is a very long movie.
It's, I mean,
we're 40 minutes in, and it doesn't really feel like it.
Not really. I mean, it probably feels that way right now because like we're trying to think of stuff to like say about what we're talking while we're watching it.
Yeah.
But I was watching it the other night, and I was in the right frame of mind, and it did not feel long ago. It felt just like the perfect movie for the mood I was in the other night, and I just got into it, and you know, if I watch a movie under those kind of circumstances, if I watch a movie under the right circumstances, I get into it to the point where I'm emotionally invested in it, and it may be like the 10th or 11th time I've seen it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the mark of a good movie, too, is that you can watch it that many times and continue to be invested in it in the same way.
I mean, exactly.
That's what makes great movies great. I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily consider the great movie by my standards, but I mean, it's a great piece of entertainment.
That's basically what I'm saying. It's a really wonderful piece of entertainment.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, like, again, if I watch it under the right circumstances, I will find myself emotionally invested in that time. I'm going to try really hard not to repeat myself.
For me, this is really the only annoying moment with these guys.
I thought this part was funny.
I will say that I should have been annoyed more than I was by these two. You know,
I think if the movie were
in lesser hands, I think I would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But lesser hands across the board, writing, acting,
of course, Lucas.
But I was not really annoyed by those guys at all, except for just a little bit in that in this one sequence that they have here.
Yeah.
This kid actor they got is really good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean he is. I mean I do agree with Dave. I mean if there's any one moment where like Spider and Chin Chin sort of get on my nerves, it's this one. But
that,
I mean it's not necessarily, you know, enough to really make me hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So
are these the same people that your brother was hooked up with?
Yes and no. Not the same guy, this guy, but,
In the back end.
No, he's discussing, like, the night that, you know, this is after, Rex's, accident and,
Supposed death. And,
Yeah.
I do. Well, Mike is making. I like how this part is incorporated in the movie. It doesn't like you don't question it.
Yeah,
it's a really interesting style choice. I think that's what it is basically. It's a choice of style.
What do you mean?
I'm saying like it's not jarring to see that kind of footage.
Oh no!
In this movie, it doesn't jar you out of the movie.
No, you're right.
I'm saying it works, but like I'm saying, it looks different because it looks different for in terms of like it was. I think it was meant.
I got you. We got you.
What I'm trying. What is the word I'm looking for?
I think we all know what he's trying to say, though, right?
Well, yeah. Okay. It's a word. It starts with this.
It goes without saying.
No, it's not that. It's a word. It starts with I. It's like intentional. It's an intentional style choice.
That's
like
it.
Like the old footage. And it doesn't jar you out of the movie. Okay. I think it's a really funny cut.
Oh, it's a very funny cut.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's like there's only like one plot purpose to this.
I was gonna say like you know,
and Chim Chim, but I mean that's it. But
you guys remember like thinking noticing what the kids thought of the movie, the kids that were sitting on the screens that we were watching. Like, what their initial reaction, or did anyone pick up on that at all?
Not really.
Okay. Because that is one of my favorite things.
Picked up on the Motorola plug there.
Okay.
But
that's one of my favorite things to do is, like, you know, especially when I'm sitting on, you know, on a family movie that I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
I like to see, like, you know, what the kids are responding to, and, like, you know, that's one of my favorite things to do. Like, you know, because, like, you know, good family movies are so freaking few and far between.
Yes, they are.